finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.
Eight teams, 12 matches each so far, and there are still five left standing. The big surprise, of course, that Chennai Super Kings, for the first time in history, apart from their two-year ban, for the first time in history, they will not be part of the knockouts. And it is in keeping with how 2020 is, throwing a lot of curveballs, throwing a lot of surprises, throwing a lot of speed breakers. But there's still, like I said, five teams standing, five teams mathematically can still make the knockouts, finish on 16 points. Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Hotspot. We're looking back at the IPL weekly review. We'll be talking about all the action, but this time around, we'll also be talking about something else, which is the return of India to international cricket in a new world, a new reality, this COVID world, this post-COVID world. In fact, I mean, you have had teams like England, Pakistan, Australia, they've all played international cricket, and now it's the turn of the Indian team led by Virat Kohli to return to the international arena. As always, I'm your host, sports journalist and broadcaster Chetan Narula, and with me, as always, and now becoming a bit of a furniture setting in our podcast, our friend and guest, not just guest anymore. He's now, like I said, the permanent furniture on this podcast. Bharat Sundaresan, all the way from Adelaide, Cricbuzz's roving international cricket writer. Welcome, Bharat, once again. Hope you're well. Things now improving in Australia.
Yeah, things have been pretty good throughout. I will be lying if I say we've been very, very lucky. We have been extremely lucky, especially in Adelaide, from the beginning of this pandemic. And speaking of furniture, yes, I am sitting in what I call my office. And as you guys can see, I don't read much because all you see are empty shelves.
Empty shelves.
I don't feel like I'm part of the furniture in my office anyway. So that's a very apt description, Chetan. I accept that.
So what we're going to do, Bharat, is we're just going to put IPL on the back burner just a bit because, like I said, the Indian team is back on the international cricket arena. So we will talk about what the tour is like, what the situation is like. So since you're in Australia, and of course, I would like to tell our listeners that he'll probably be the only Indian media representation on the Indian tour of Australia this time around. 50% Indian that is left in him, or let's say 33%, because there's 33% West Indian also in him. So 33% Indian that's left in him. Tell us about this tour, how it's come along, and then we'll talk about the dates and the squads.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll have my old buddy Gav Joshi here, but he sounds more Australian than most Australians do.
75% so, Australian. He's 75% Australian.
105% Australian. So, except like the fact that he looks a little like us, I think everything else about him is Australian. So, yeah, I mean, finally it's here. It looked like it will take, I mean, it has taken forever for Cricket Australia to finalize their schedule. I tweeted the other day saying how it's taken them longer than the actual length of the tour to finally find a port of arrival for India, which was always the case. It wasn't a case of the schedule itself. It was just really Cricket Australia managing to find a place, a state, a city, which will allow the Indian contingent to land and quarantine. So I think they've found a win-win-win situation by managing Sydney as that destination, because what it does do is because New South Wales, the government has been slightly more lenient with their lockdown measures and protocols. The Indians will not only they will have to quarantine for 14 days, but they will still get to train, which is what they wanted all along. And there'll be no restrictions on how many can train together. So the whole entire squad can train together, which is something that the Indians will really look forward to. And apart from that, it's the schedule is as it was expected. Once Queensland withdrew from hosting the Indians, or at least at the start of the tour. So we're going to see a lot of cricket in New South Wales, including two practice games. So the whole white ball leg and the two practice games. So I will end up spending a lot of time in Sydney with Gaurav, clearly. then just a short visit back home to Adelaide for the first ever day-night test, India versus Australia, which will be exciting. And it will not be a normal tour, of course. You guys won't be there. So the way I look at it, I don't think there'll be many press conferences it'll be an extremely unreal tour. A, because you guys won't be there. B, because our access will be rather limited. C, because the moment the match finishes, you can start writing because there are no press conferences
And like,
nobody telling you there are just three questions left, and which is, of course, an integral part of Test cricket, as you know.
And the first time, there'll be no transcription to do, isn't there? Or you'll still be transcribing. No. But this time, you'll be transcribing alone.
I know. I won't be able to do the old Indian journalist thing of, like, you know, sharing it from going from, like, you know, the first minute to 5 minutes. You can't share it around. So, yeah, I'm the one-man army. And look, the way I look at it, if anything happens during the tour, I represent like 2 billion people asking the hard questions, the tough questions. I've been in that position before. I remember being in Zimbabwe in 2016 and telling MS Dhoni when India lost the game to Zimbabwe and he was captain on that tour. He walked in looking quite sullen. I said, like, what are you looking so stressed about? Like, I'm the one with all the pressure. India wants me to ask hard questions. So, and I think a repeat of that. But yeah, I mean, the cricket should be of... quite a high standard, you would imagine, when these two teams face each other anyway. A lot to look forward to.
Absolutely. It's been a bit of a break for the Indian team, but they're still on top of their game. Had a bit of a disappointing outing in New Zealand, especially in the test format, but obviously number two and, you know, so much on stake. We'll be talking about India-Australia in fine detail. There's lots to talk about. And of course, once the IPL gets over, that's the only thing to talk about, really. So we'll be getting Bharat. And again, he's the only representative. But just talking about the transcription, I would want to tell our listeners and viewers, here's how we do it. So Virat Kohli comes for the press conference. You have around, say, 15 minutes of the press conference. And he talks a lot. And we ask him a lot of questions, a lot. And that's why he talks a lot. And of course, it's good when Virat talks a lot because he makes a lot of sense with his words. So I'll take the first 5 minutes, 1 to 5. Then the first question after the 5th minute, Bharat will start transcribing. And usually we have the last 5 minutes for another of our journalists, R. Kaushik or somebody else. R. Kaushik, very, very senior journalist. And of course, if there is a question in Hindi or Marathi, there's always another senior journalist, Sunandan Lele, to transcribe. So it's a bit of a fun. And like Bharat said, we will be missing it intensely or, you know, this time around because, yeah, very... unfortunate situation, very indifferent situation where, you know, travel is restricted. Frankly, no Indian media can get through because the Australian borders are shut. Let's just be very honest about it. The Australian borders are shut. There are no flights. And, there are around 35,000 Australians waiting to get back home before Christmas. So, cricket takes a bit of a backseat at that time. 5 journalists traveling from India takes a bit of a backseat at that particular time. So moving on, let's talk about the schedule then. There'll be a three ODI series starting in Sydney on 27th of November. So 27th, 29th and 2nd of December. So first two ODIs in Sydney, then the third in Canberra, where they'll also have the first T20, which is 4th of December, and then 6th and 8th back in Sydney for the final two T20s. And then simultaneously, they'll also have the practice games at the SCG. So much so that the WBBL matches have been shifted to an alternate ground to accommodate the Indian team and their practice for the day-night test match. Then, of course, Adelaide test, the day-night test, which makes a bit more sense now that fans will be allowed. Because if there were no fans, it doesn't make any sense to have the day-night test. Absolutely doesn't make any sense. Then, of course, Boxing Day test match at the MCG, as always. Again, 25,000 fans. Third test in Sydney, the New Year's test. A bit of a break there, 7 days break. And finally, moving on to Brisbane. Bharat, a couple of surprises there. Like I said, now that the fans are there, it makes more sense to have the day-night test. And B, Cricket Australia is hell-bent or... you know, they're hell-bent on having so many different venues. If you look at how England have done it this time around, they just used Southampton and Manchester And yeah, they're done with it. They played so many matches at just two venues. Yes, the pitches were overused and everything, but that's part of the situation right now. Is it surprising that it's almost like a normal schedule would be like when India travels to Australia? Because we go to all these places, Perth or Brisbane. I mean, I'm assuming if the situation was fine, then Perth would have had a T20 or an ODI. So Perth is the only place that's remaining. Otherwise, they're going the full circle.
Yeah, except Tasmania, which...
They never go to Tasmania, yeah.
I don't know why. It's a beautiful part of the country. But yeah, like you said, Perth will not see any international cricket for the first time in 50 years because the state borders are shut. And there are reports that they might be shut till April of next year. So forget the cricket or the cricketers. People can't go in and out of Western Australia, which happens to be the largest state in the country. Ironically, but I'm not surprised that unlike in England, where Southampton and Manchester were picked because they have a hotel on board, like just part of the stadium, as we know, that's the main reason why they were picked as the venues for their entire test summer. But you have to realize that Australia, the thankfully the pandemic hasn't hit as hard as the rest of the world, especially the UK. In the cricketing world sense, but the lockdown...
Especially India.
India, we're not surprised. Nobody is surprised. No. The people in our wonderful country, it is always going to be difficult. So the lockdown measures have been rather strict. That's why they've been able to control the whole virus. But the situation here is that because the states have started opening up, and also beyond that, like the SCG Trust and the MCC, which is the Melbourne Cricket Club, have an understanding with Cricket Australia that in a normal circumstance, they do get a test match every year. I mean, Sydney and you'll always have a Melbourne and Sydney test match. In fact, after this year's announcement, yesterday's announcement that the Boxing Day test will be in Melbourne, they've actually gone ahead and signed a 3-year agreement that the Boxing Day test will stay in Melbourne for the next 3 years. Because I think, there is always this rivalry between Victoria and South Australia. They're trying to eat into each other. There is a lot of rivalry, not just on the sporting field.
And if I may interject here, surprisingly, when I was there, they had the new Perth Arena or the Optus Arena, it's called. The Perth Arena is the Optus Arena. They've been trying very hard to steal away the Boxing Day test match, which, no disrespect to Perth, I like the city. I like the Waka better than the Optus Arena. Personally speaking, it was not the best of the stadium and certainly not when where you would want to host the Boxing Day test match. Yeah, please carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember last year when there were the bushfires and there was all talk about the quality of air in Melbourne and Sydney. Perth did try to they put one finger up saying that, maybe we can host the Boxing Day test. That was dismissed.
Yeah.
But this year, Adelaide was actually kept as a secondary option for the Boxing Day test. So that, of course, the Victorians wanted to keep the Boxing Day test in Melbourne. But once Adelaide started, thumping their chest and saying that we will get the Boxing Day test, it got them, I think, even more desperate to hold on to that Boxing Day test. The last place they want it to come to is Adelaide. So I can tell you that a lot of locals here were very hopeful that they'll get to see a Boxing Day test for the first time in, I think, 40 years and spend Christmas here. But yeah, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So even I'll be spending Christmas in Melbourne, as always.
Yeah, not a bad thing to do, actually. It's always merry. Not the wintry Christmas, because it's always very different. I've been to Australia. I've been lucky enough to have been to Australia a couple of times for the test series. Again, it makes me even more reminiscent of those times, because this time I won't be there. But it's really nice place to be. It's summer. It's very different from what you see on the movies and the television, snow associated with Christmas. Very, very different. The Christmas trees are up at the town center. They have Christmas murals and everything. Maybe a bit subdued this time because, again, I'm just assuming, because I'm hoping the number of infections will stay down. People will be on the streets and, just merriment will be back among the Australian public. But again, they'll put up the Christmas trees, lights and everything, murals on the town center buildings. It's so beautiful. I have a complete collection of, so many pictures and videos of my travels there. Again, like I said, it's going to be a tough time not being there and watching it on television. But now let's talk about the squads, Bharat. We'll talk just about the surprises because we have a lot of players to keep up with. Talking about the ODI squad and the T20 squad, the biggest surprise, Rohit Sharma is not there. Bit of a confusion. It's weird because either he's injured or he's not injured because he's been in the nets. The selectors say they are monitoring it. I mean, it's a bit of bit of a communication gap there. What's really happening, we don't know. Because, of course, Rohit Sharma is with his franchisee. But, you know, the BCCI should have a medical team. Okay, don't divulge the secrets in public. But at least they should know what's happening with their player. At the end of the day, yes, he's on loan with Mumbai Indians and everything. But at the end of the day, he is an Indian player. It is something similar to, you know, what you see in international football. But in reverse. For example, Harry Kane, he's a Tottenham player, right? But he goes on international duty with England. But every time he picks up a knock there or his injury or his health, the Tottenham medical staff are in direct conversation with the England medical staff. So in reverse, they loan out Harry Kane to England. They're paying his wages and everything. Here, it's a bit different that Mumbai Indians are paying wages as well. But again, the bottom line is, BCCI should be having a deeper knowledge about Rohit Sharma's injury troubles, don't they?
I mean, you would hope that they do have a deeper understanding or they are monitoring his injury as closely as the franchisee is. But this actually reminds me of the 2011 IPL. If you think back, there was a similar controversy about Gautam Gambhir, who was then Calcutta. I don't remember. I think he was captain of Calcutta. And this is right after the 2011 World Cup when India was supposed to go to West Indies. And similarly, like, he picked up an injury during the IPL and continued playing in the IPL in the playoffs. And there was a big, like, you know, a lot of debate over, like, you know, has he picked club over country? And this is, again, talking about the third or fourth season of the IPL, long, long time ago. So,
We are heading for the same route because the news is that Rohit Sharma will probably be fit for the knockouts. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at assuming Mumbai Indians, we'll be coming to that. Assuming Mumbai Indians do finish first and second and then they win their first game, they're still playing two matches or a max of three matches. What happens if he aggravates his injury and is then ruled out of the Australian tour? That's a very, very big issue right now. And it becomes an even bigger issue because, A, they've already named a vice captain for the ODIs and T20s, that's KL Rahul, without understanding or revealing what is the extent of Rohit Sharma's injury. He may not be available, then everything goes away. But if he's available, then what do? Then you tell KL Rahul, no, you're not vice captain anymore. Or then you say, oh, Rohit, sorry, our bad. We thought you might not be available. So we named a new vice captain. What was the rush to name a new vice captain, knowing well that this guy might recover, might not recover? This is a classic case of the BCCI selection committee not making any sense.
And this just tells you why I tell a lot of Australian journalists this, like, being an Indian cricket journalist, well, it is I don't think many who haven't done it before can think about how difficult the challenge it is.
Oh, especially, absolutely.
I'm not about like journalists in India, but foreign journalists where there's so much information just provided to you, like, you know, at times even before you ask it, because that's the kind of the fluidity, the transparency you get from the board. But in India, it's always a guessing game. Like, who knows, right? And with the French, that I didn't, of course, follow the story as closely as you did, the whole Rohit Sharma, like the mystery around his injury. But I just saw a couple of tweets where someone said, oh, maybe the video of him batting in the nets that the Mumbai Indians franchise, the social media team put out, was not like from that day, but from a few days earlier. So there was just always mystery. And I think it's the magic of covering cricket in India where you can keep speculating about everything till the proverbial cows come home. So it's just part of being an Indian journalist, I guess.
So what we'll do now is we're just not going to talk about the squads just from an Australian point of view. What we're going to do is we're also going to see what they have done during the IPL. So KL Rahul, obviously, he is now the new Indian vice captain and, ODIs and T20s, which is in a way a fair reflection of what he's achieved so far. I mean, you would think that he is the new power center I always envisage him as leading India someday, because at some point Virat Kohli will step away from one of the three formats. And as much as everybody wants Rohit Sharma to step in, you have to look at the future. It's either going to be KL Rahul or Shreyas Iyer, who are, let's say, after the next two T20 World Cups, Virat Kohli decides, I don't want to play T20 cricket anymore, because it's, he already has so many issues with so much workload. And it's going to get even more intense now over the next 2-3 years because of the packed scheduling. You have to make up for the 9-month loss. So then what happens? You can't go to, at the same time, Rohit and Virat, almost same age. You can't say KL Rahul, you can't say Rohit Sharma takes over the T20 captaincy. It has to be somebody like Shreyas Iyer or KL Rahul, because you're building towards the next World Cup. And of course, KL Rahul was the stand-in captain in New Zealand in one of the matches. Yeah. So it's an obvious call. And of course, he's deserved his, because he has so much wide ball form and probably the best T20 batsman in India right now. T20 batsman, not wide ball batsman, T20 batsman. But he's also in the test squad, which is surprising. And maybe surprising, maybe not surprising. There are two ways to look at it. One, Rohit Sharma is not there. Rohit Sharma is not there, who would have opened if he had been available in New Zealand. He would, again, injury, setting him back. He probably would have opened in Australia. If he's available, he'd probably open in Australia. So India have Mayank Agarwal, KL Rahul, Prithvi Shaw and Shubman Gill, four opening options. Hanuma Vihari can also open, but I'm assuming he's not part of the opening plan because there's no middle order backup. No middle order batsman actually named in the squad, but the entire squad is staying in Australia at the same time. So Shreyas Iyer can be later on added to the squad, but there's also Rishabh Pant. I'm not sure if he'll play ahead of Vridhiman Saha or if he'll play just as a pure batsman, because as it is, there are some fitness issues around Rishabh Pant. But again, we'll come to that. So KL Rahul, he's in the squad, in the test squad, because Rohit Sharma is not there. If Rohit Sharma was there, would they name KL Rahul in the test squad? And B, they are saying, the selectors are saying, that his white ball form has been so good, we can't ignore it and we have to give him another shot in the test arena. Your turn.
Yeah, and I'm with the selectors for this decision, really, because it's not like if, say, subsequently the Ranji Trophy was also going on and there was someone scoring a lot of runs and in form and in touch, and then KL Rahul gets picked over that person purely based on his white ball exploits, then maybe there was a case to say, well, that's unfair. But the fact that the only cricket that any of these guys have played is this IPL,
and it's
going on right now. And again, when you speak of KL Rahul, he's not someone who's not played test cricket. He has played test cricket. Yes, he might have had two years where he wasn't scoring too many runs and he wasn't picked in the test squad for New Zealand, which is the last assignment for India before the whole pandemic. But just purely based on how he's batting now, the form he is in, and the fact that he's not a newbie to test cricket, I thought it was an automatic pick. And again, they're not saying that he's an automatic starter in test 11. I mean, if you just keep the Rohit Sharma mystery aside, you would still look at Mayank Agarwal and Prithvi Shaw opening in that first test in Adelaide, unless something really dramatic happens. And India have the advantage of playing two practice matches. And in fact, they have more of an advantage than Australia. They'll play more red ball cricket. They're red ball cricketers going into that test series than the Australian guys. Because we had a press conference with Trevor Holmes, the Australian selector, some time back. They don't know how to get the Smiths and the Warners and the Cummins some red ball action. So that second India A or the India 11 match against Australia A could be like a mini test match in itself. You might see a lot of players who will play for Australia playing that game. So it's almost like a 4.5 test match series, this one, though the first half doesn't count. So I'm with the selectors here if they've gone with KL Rahul purely. He's proven quality, proven talent, and he's batting so well. So why not?
Yeah, just needs the numbers under his belt in test match arena. And I'm not, there was this question to me when I had said, the team has been announced, whether who's your opening combination? Excuse me, who's your opening combination for the first test match? I would say, in current form, it has to be Mayank Agarwal and KL Rahul, because Shubman Gill, if Rohit Sharma is not fit, it has to be KL Rahul and Mayank Agarwal, considering their form, considering that they've been playing together for so long. Prithvi Shaw, I mean, he doesn't, you know, just fill you with confidence at the moment, especially in Australia, in those conditions, especially against Josh Hazlewood, Pat Cummins and Mitchell Starc, and now James Pattinson. I'm expecting him to be named in the test squad as well. And then, of course, you have Shubman Gill. Again, very, very bright talent. He could bat in the middle order as well. But again, he hasn't played too much international cricket yet. He's getting a taste in the IPL of what international cricket could be all about. But again, in this series, you would want your most experienced pair or most experienced batsman to be in your first choice 11. So, you know, it'll be in an interesting one. The other selection, Sanju Samson is the new second choice ODI and T20, not ODI, at least T20 wicketkeeper, because Rishabh Pant has been left out of both the ODI and the T20 squad, which is not surprising because you look at, you know, what was happening before the pandemic. Before the pandemic hit, Rishabh Pant was struggling to hold down his spot. He lost his ODI spot. He lost his T20 spot. He was still in the squad. He was still in the squad, but they were starting to prefer KL Rahul as the keeping batting option. And it was successful in New Zealand. And he said, okay, I like it. KL Rahul is now going to bat in the middle order in ODIs and keep wickets. And he's going to open and keep wickets in the T20s. And Sanju Samson is your backup. And Rishabh Pant is out into the squad. Now he's out of the squad because he hasn't scored runs, A. And because he's also reportedly unfit. Apparently he's overweight, right? But he will be part of the contingent because he's named as the second choice wicketkeeper in test match. So is he not overweight or unfit for test cricket? And is he overweight and unfit for ODI and T20 cricket? Or is it just about the numbers? Because again, if there was one batsman who wanted a good IPL or who needed a good IPL and get back his squad or his spot in the squad, who was falling back from the Indian team into the fringes, it was Rishabh Pant. It is not like Sanju Samson who's trying to come up. Rishabh Pant was on a downward journey. So it's again a weird one there.
It is very weird, yeah. Especially when you speak about weight issues and picking someone, like, you know, when you dropped someone, and one of the reasons given is...
We talked about healthy waistlines, remember?
Absolutely. And, like, you know, and how much we love healthy waistlines.
Yeah, we love healthy waistlines, especially mine. I love my healthy waistline.
No. I mean, in India, they say it is a sign of prosperity. I've always looked at it as like someone who's comfortable in their skin. Like, all these people posting pictures of going to the gym and, like, you know, what their body looks like under the shirt. Who cares? Like, on social media. Caught doing that for good reason.
a very good reason.
Very, very good reason. So it's a strange one with Rishabh Pant. I guess you don't have too many backup wicketkeeping options in India. If you look around the country, you've always looked at KS Bharat, I think he's been the one. And I've been hoping that we get a Bharat playing international cricket in my time. There have been a couple who played in the past.
Yeah.
And of course, my friend Bharat, who played for the Trinidad. But he's literally been your third choice keeper. So India is not spoiled for options when it comes to wicketkeeping in red ball cricket. And Rishabh Pant has an extraordinary test record. He scored hundreds in or 100 in Australia last time around. He won the hearts of Australians by his jabbering behind the stumps. Though I don't know what he said, nothing which was funny, but for some reason, the Australian public really fell in love with him. And that was big news here, by the way. Rishabh Pant being left out was bigger news than Rohit Sharma not featuring in the three spots. I'll just let you know that.
So
he's not done justice to his white ball skills. You know, at times he's looked in too much of a hurry when he comes into bat in white ball cricket. So he's never really found his tempo. And Sanju Samson, like, we've spoken so much about him on this podcast, started the tournament so well, had that lean run in between. Looks like he's found his form again. Looks like he's scoring some runs. And scored, I think, a crucial 50 right before the election meeting, which always helps. Historically, if you look at guys who get runs when it matters.
Yeah.
It's not when you say when it matters, it's not from a team perspective, but from an individual perspective. And there is a selection meeting happening the next day or like 2 days from then. So I think it's helped his cause, but Yeah, but this is a big wake-up call for Rishabh Pant, considering he was looked at as the next big thing of Indian cricket. It has been for the last 2 or 3 years. So much talk of why, like, Dhoni should have moved out 3 years ago. He's held Rishabh Pant back. And now suddenly, like, Rishabh Pant seems to have, like, gone out along with Dhoni. So it's,
yeah,
considering they're all going to stay together. Maybe Shreyas Iyer will be opening the batting in the Boxing Day test. We never expected Mayank Agarwal and Hanuma Vihari to
Hanuma
walk out
Vihari,
last
yeah,
time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not ruling anything out.
Yeah, and just talking about Shreyas Iyer, you mentioned Shreyas Iyer there, and just the one thing that I want to mention about him, I fully expect him, if Rohit Sharma does not make the cut for the test series, or even if he does make the cut, there are no flights as of now. Things might change, you never know. You know, it's a quickly changing scenario, but as of now, there are no flights. So once this whole contingent goes there, they're going to stay there for 2.5 months. They're going by chartered flight. They're coming back by chartered flight. So there's every possibility that Shreyas Iyer has been told to pack his whites and go and take them along. And, you know, he could, and he deserves to be part of the test squad. He's been, if you're applying the white ball logic to KL Rahul's form, you can apply it to Shreyas Iyer's form as well. And because India needs to start investing in a middle order batsman for the future in test cricket as well. Somebody who would pick up for when, you know, I'm not saying Virat Kohli is close to leaving or anything. I think he has a lot of cricket still left in him, at least if he keeps on playing the test format. But you might just want to have a new batsman coming in who could be one for the future. And that could be middle order. I'm talking about the middle order. So that could be, of course, Shreyas Iyer. Sanju Samson was part of the New Zealand squad as well. So no surprises there. He was part of the T20 squad. So he's mainly retained his spot.
Yeah.
And then, of course, similarly, they could ask, we look at the ODI squad. There is no second wicketkeeper there. So they could ask Sanju Samson and Rishabh Pant to be the second, stand-in wicketkeeper. You never know how it goes. Or maybe Vridhiman Saha, just give him some practice. I mean, he did surprise us with that opening partnership with David Warner, keeping Sunrisers Hyderabad in the competition as we move along. The one surprise, I mean, the ODI side is not very surprising. Apart from that, it's pretty much regulation. And we don't really care about ODIs right now because, you know, it's about T20 World Cup right now. It's not about the ODI World Cup. The T20 side, Bharat, there's one name, Varun Chakravarti. It's a feel-good factor, feel-good story. The guy gave up on cricket, went into his job, you know, went to the normal life. Not just a job, it went into normal life. It's not easy to give up cricket. And then he's kept playing there in the corporate world, in the corporate team, then started making his way back into the IPL, taking 5-wicket hauls on this biggest T20 stage, bamboozling batsman, benching Kuldeep Yadav. Yeah. That's a big thing. Kuldeep Yadav is your number one wrist spinner, playing the World Cup and everything. It's been a year. It's been more than a year since that happened. But benching Kuldeep Yadav and now walking into the Indian team. What a story that is.
It's a great story. The only unfortunate bit about the story is it's going to give false hope to a lot of fat, unfit Indians in like Bombay and Bangalore who look at him and think, you know, even I have a chance of like...
I just a news flash for everybody who goes to play, you know, club cricket on Sunday. You're not making it to the IPL. You're not making it to the Indian team. No chance. That's happening. Keep playing your Sunday club cricket and, you know, just listening to this just keep listening to this podcast. Yeah. Carry on.
You get licenses as well on this podcast. So that is one. Like,
yeah, we do give a lot of advice. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great story. And I've told you in the past, like, Indian cricket has so many rags to riches stories and guys who come from nowhere and their life completely changes like once they start playing cricket. But here is like a story that a lot of middle class Indians can relate to, where like, you know, job and your education, your academics, and just like, you know, getting a life, as they say in our part of the world, comes in the way of you picking sport as a career. Yeah. But here is someone who tried his hand at it, gave it a break, got himself like a real life job, as you called it, but still, you know, didn't completely give up on the dream. And there you go. He's come back and all it takes is one good IPL, especially if you are a mystery spinner or an extremely fast bowler, or like if you bowl extreme pace. All it takes is half a season where you impress and you one 5-wicket haul always helps.
Yeah.
you're just that close to getting into the Indian team purely because you're such a novelty even now, right? Like the way he's bowled and just the way he seems to have this air of, and because he's had this real life experiences. I mean, look at Tim Payne. I mean, you wouldn't talk of Varun Chakravarti and Tim Payne in the
together
in breath generally, but
you are similar, but you are talking about them in the same breath.
I am, and you expect like weird and wacky things from me anyway, Chetan. So, but they've had real life experiences. Tim Payne was on the verge of quitting cricket, as we all know. Almost joined Kookaburra, was supposed to be providing jerseys for the Australian team 2 years ago. And then he comes back in, they bring back in just because on like literally a gut feel, Ricky Ponting saying, no, you need to pick the best wicketkeeper who had wasn't keeping for his state at that point. And look where he is now. But when you speak to Tim Payne when after a defeat, especially, you can see that real life experiences play a huge role. That perspective you get from being out there, like, you know, slogging it out and earning your dollar or your rupee, like, you know, your salary at the end of the day. I think it you can see it in the way he goes about his cricket. Yeah, it's a great feel-good story, and but a warning to a lot of people as well, as we said.
Right. And you look at the test side, and I mean, before we move on, best wishes to Varun Chakravarti. We hope he, you know, does well. India have two T20 World Cups, especially the one next year, which is going to be played, we hope, in India. There'll be a homecoming of the T20 World Cup. And it's been a while since India won the T20 World Cup. And it's been a while since India won an ICC trophy. And it's been a while since Virat Kohli has been trying to get a hand on the ICC trophy. So we'll be watching with keen interest how India's T20 preparations go on for the T20 World Cup next year, or the next two T20 World Cups. Moving on to the test side, the interesting bit here is, like I mentioned, four openers, Shubman Gill included, Prithvi Shaw included. Again, Ishant Sharma not there. He's injured. They're still monitoring his fitness. Mohammad Siraj is in the test squad. And, you know, you assume Ishant Sharma being fit, although the timeline is not very impressive, because I was reading this article in the Times of India by our colleague, K. Srinivas Rao. And the timeline is not very impressive, because if he's if he goes and he does a quarantine for 14 days and then he only starts to bowl 4 days or 5 days before the first test match, so he's missing out on the practice matches, and then he goes half-baked into the test series, which will be the New Zealand series all over again. He was picked with an injury there and did not play, and Indian bowling suffered. So without Ishant Sharma, you have Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Shami, Umesh Yadav, Navdeep Saini and Mohammad Siraj. Last time around, Bharat, we had Bumrah, Shami and Ishant, and they terrorized. Yes, there was no David Warner, there was no Steve Smith, but even then, they terrorized the Australian batting lineup. You cannot play against players who are not there. You can only play against players who are there, and they did well enough. Everything what that was asked. Let's just be honest. The Indian team was at full strength. The Australian team, whatever the reasons, were at full strength at that time, and the Indian Pacers out bowled the Australian Pacers at their home. How big a loss is Ishant Sharma going to be?
We just have to look at the second test match in New Zealand to know how big a loss he is. Because when, with Ishant Sharma's loss, when you don't have him anymore, you lose that control.
Yeah.
Whether he takes a new ball or his first change, you kind of lose that figurehead, like that senior presence on the field. Like he's always at mid-on or mid-off. He's constantly in Bumrah's ear or Shami's ear. And like, you know, Bumrah did go through spells where he was bowling really well, beating the bat.
He's not getting any wickets, yeah.
Way. And you felt Ishant Sharma's loss more during those periods than actually him having the ball in his hand. And Umesh Yadav, yes, I mean, the last test previous to the one he played in New Zealand was the one where he took 10 wickets in a match against West Indies in Hyderabad. But and he played that test match in Perth where he went all over the park. So he's also very experienced. This would be his, what, fourth tour of Australia. Not many fast bowlers.
Ishant had, the last tour was Ishant's fourth tour. This time it will be Umesh Yadav's fourth tour. Yeah.
Exactly. So he's as experienced as Ishant, purely on like in terms of coming
time.
To Australia.
But
he would just still don't look at him as someone who's going to provide that control after the new ball, after Bumrah and Shami are. So it's a huge loss. But I, in fact, would look at Navdeep Saini as being the third seamer. I'm sure he's, in my opinion, he's taken strides. He's gone past Umesh Yadav in the pecking order.
Yeah.
And Siraj has taken a lot of Ranji Trophy wickets, a lot of red ball wickets. So he has that good. And he's had good A2s of Australia in the past. So he has a lot. And I think he had a very good A2 of New Zealand earlier this year as well. So he has a lot going for him. But in my head, first test, no Ishan Sharma, Navdeep Saini makes his test debut.
And in fact, you know, first test you're talking about, which will be in Adelaide, and you don't have to go back to the New Zealand tour. You go back to the last tour, even in Adelaide, when we had that first test, you had clutch control with Ishan Sharma. Jasprit Bumrah didn't take the new ball in that test match. So you had Ishan Sharma with the new ball, you had Ishan Sharma with the old ball, and you had Ravichandran Ashwin from the other end bowling 80 overs in the second inning. So you had control and attack from both ends, and it was brilliant to watch. My only concern is with the Pink Day test match. Is, you know, they whether they will say, okay, you know, Umesh Yadav can move the ball a bit more than Navdeep Saini. So again, I agree with you. Navdeep Saini, I believe, is, you know, taking those strides quickly, and with Mohammad Siraj as well, because every time you see him bowl, play with the white ball or bowl with the white ball, everybody says, you know what, he's, you know, oh, you think he's good? If he bowls well, they'll say, oh, you think he's good with the white ball? Just wait and watch, and let him bowl with the red ball. If he doesn't bowl well with the white, you know, with the white ball, they say, okay, you know what? He's more of a red ball bowler anyway. So with Mohammad Siraj, you expect him to play and you say, okay, you know what? Let it happen now. But the other news is that they're also taking four young pacers with them. They're taking Kamlesh Nagarkoti, Karthik Tyagi, Ishan Purel, and T. Natarajan. I don't see, I mean, like I said, all of them will be together. They might send these extra bowlers back if they get if they do catch a flight. The Emirates is still flying, so you never know. They might just book a flight. I don't see any of these four stepping up to the test side unless there are a few injuries. Maybe to the T20 squad, but, you know, it's too early in the tour for any injuries to happen. So, yeah, overall, a well-rounded squad there. We'll quickly move on to the IPL, which is actually the name of the episode, the IPL Weekly Review, but we've been talking about what players have done in the IPL and whether or not, because, like Bharat said, that is the only cricket that, you know, they have really looked at or have had in recent times. Quite interesting there, you know, when these we talk about Varun Chakravarti with his 5-wicket haul, or Navdeep Saini currently out injured, but, you know, he's given a good account of himself as well. We talk about what's happening in the IPL with the table. All teams have played 12 matches. Like I said, there are five teams which can get on to 16 points. Bharat, what did you make of the current scenario where, you know, when you say that five teams can get on 16 points, but mathematically, given the net run rate, Sunrisers Hyderabad and Kolkata Knight Riders, they have an uphill battle ahead of them?
Yeah, we've seen the IPL have these mathematical or provide these mathematical opportunities for teams to go through, and it rarely happens. Like a couple of times I remember Mumbai sneaking through where they had to chase down a target in like 13 or 12 overs, which I remember Aditya Tare pulling off a dramatic run chase against Rajasthan, Rahul Dravid throwing his cap. That's the only time I remember a team somehow using this mathematical advantage or mathematical opportunity to go through and make it to the playoffs. So, and just the way Kings 11...
CSK also did it. CSK also did it once. I think it was 2013 or 12. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. When they were almost out of contention, then they needed to win everything. And they needed a few results to go their way. So all of those results went their way. They won all their matches and they won straight through the final and they won the tournament. So, yeah, I mean, but these teams are not CSK.
Yeah, exactly. And it's happened before. But just the way Punjab have been playing, look, for our dedicated, loyal audience who listen to us, who watch these videos, they know we picked it. Once this Gale comes into the team, we set Kings 11, Punjab's fortunes will change. And they have changed. They've not lost a game since. Yeah, so they have the momentum. They... you wouldn't expect them to, suddenly lose that momentum just the way they have been playing. Delhi have, I just looked at the table. They have slipped up the board, lost three games in the draw. Just the way they have, the performance they have and the way they manage this season, you'd expect them to still be safe.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right. I mean, I still don't see Sunrisers or Kolkata. I can't rule anyone out. Like you said, mathematically, everybody has a chance. But yeah, I'm just happy that I picked Chennai and Rajasthan to not make it. And well, I've been proven right. I've stuck with them from the moment you asked me. And
I said, you know, Chennai probably might make it. So I have been proven wrong there. But I also said, you know, Sunrisers Hyderabad. And at that point in time, Sunrisers Hyderabad were fourth in the table. Today they are sitting at sixth in the table. They're still, like I said, mathematically, they can still get to 14 points, not 16 points, just 14 points. But we're starting to see that 14 points might just be enough if the top two get to 16 and the bottom two get to 14. So 14 might just be enough. But again, you will need other results to go your way, net run rate to fall your way. Rajasthan Royals, again, they also need to win their last remaining game. So it's pretty interesting. I think Kings 11 Punjab are the most well-suited because they're not playing anybody in the top four. You know, they've already played Delhi, RCB and Mumbai Indians. Kings 11 Punjab, Kolkata Knight Riders, Rajasthan Royals are all playing each other. So that's the interesting matchup. In fact, today's game is, if we're talking about the recording that's happening at the moment, Thursday today? Yeah, so you're talking about 29th October. We have CSK with KKR. KKR with all to play for, and then KKR's last match is against Rajasthan Royals. You look at Kings 11 Punjab, they're playing Rajasthan Royals, and then their last game is against Chennai Super Kings. So that's, I'm not saying that's an easy ride, but they're playing CSK team, which is giving youngsters a chance. They're not, CSK hasn't had their first choice 11, but they definitely are not playing their first choice 11 now. The most intriguing matchup for me, which is remaining, is Delhi Capitals versus Mumbai Indians, which is on Saturday. Where, you know, you look at Delhi Capitals, they're playing Mumbai Indians and they're playing RCB. So they're playing, you know, both teams which are above them. They need to win at least one of those games to make it to, you know, to get those extra 2 points for safety and just be outside the reach of Sunrisers Hyderabad and Rajasthan Royals. And of course, the last game of the series or of this stage is Sunrisers Hyderabad versus Mumbai Indians. And before that, we have Kolkata Knight Riders and Rajasthan Royals on Sunday night. So I think that game, along with the Delhi game against Mumbai Indians or the Delhi game against RCB on Monday, is the one that is going to decide which team might just scrape through.
Yeah, and if I've learned anything from watching football World Cups and Euro Cups over the years, it's that the team which gets knocked out, it often becomes the most dangerous team in these situations, because Chennai have nothing to win or to lose. Like you said, they're going to play what they call expressive cricket. As it's become the buzzword these days. They're going to express themselves and already start planning for the next season. So they'll be playing daring cricket. So if they end up, like, you know, they could easily end up as party poopers, drag either a Kolkata or a Punjab down with them. So they become a very dangerous team in this circumstance. But you would still think the top four teams right now will be the four teams who go through, unless, like I said, there's something very, very dramatic left in store in the IPL. It is the IPL at the end of the day. Things do happen.
And, you know, you're just talking about CSK there. I've heard from, you know, a little bird that the mega auction might just happen next year because they're contemplating it. And if that happens, then maybe CSK might just be able to right a couple of their wrongs. You know, we've been talking about two teams that are not going to make it. So CSK is already ruled out. Rajasthan, let's not do that this time around. Let's just name the four teams, because the next time we're going to talk or record a podcast is when we'll be looking ahead to the knockouts. Right. So let's talk about the four teams that you think are going to make it and the four teams that I think are going to make it, or the two teams. You know, I'm assuming Mumbai Indians and RCB. To my mind, I can't see RCB screwing this up. I just can't. Yeah. I mean, they have done some weird stuff, like, you know, demoting ABD. And I expect, you know, they got that out of their system. They do make stupid mistakes. So they made their stupid mistakes. They've gotten it out of their system. Then now they're looking for some consistency and, you know, just play normal cricket. So, yeah, I don't see RCB falling out of this, although stranger things have happened. Their run rate is not that great, 0.048. Delhi, again, not that great a run rate, 0.030. So, and Kings 11 Punjab, minus 0.049. So these run rates, which have 0.01s, these ones, they change very, very quickly. You know, they are in their hundreds in decimals. These change quickly. Let's predict. What are your four teams that are going to make it?
I think I'll stick with Mumbai, Bangalore, Delhi, and Punjab.
Yeah.
See that status quo changing in the next few days. So, yeah, those are my picks.
I would have said, I mean, yes, I am from Delhi, but I don't want any brickbats here from the Delhi Walas because let's just say that I think if Mumbai Indians and RCB had not, you know, had been in a precarious situation, which they are not, and Delhi is playing both of them in their last matches, if they hadn't been in those, you know, comfortable situations, if they had been in a bit of precarious situation where they had everything to play for, I would have said that Delhi Capitals will drop down. Because I wouldn't have seen them beating Mumbai or RCB at this stage when their form is just starting to dip, when they need a bit of inspiration or they need a bit of an individual brilliance. You know, their lineup is not working anymore. They had Prithvi Shaw up top. That's gone out of the factor. You have Ajinkya Rahane and Shikhar Dhawan, very similar batsmen. Rishabh Pant struggling for runs. Shreyas Iyer can't do it on his own all the time. Hetmyer is Hetmyer. And then Marcus Stoinis. You know, he can hit big at times, but there's a streak of inconsistency in there. So Delhi Capitals just about losing form at the wrong time. But because MI and RCB are in so comfortable a position, MI can lose the next match and still beat SRH and finish top of the table. So, and similarly, RCB need only one win they could be sitting pretty. So they are playing Sunrisers Hyderabad on Saturday and then they are playing Delhi on Monday. So if they beat Sunrisers Hyderabad, they qualify. And then on Monday, they might not play their full strength side. So that will be an advantage for Delhi Capitals or if Mumbai Indians. But then it will depend on Mumbai Indians. If Mumbai Indians lose to Delhi Capitals, then RCB will think, okay, we need to finish, you know, in the top two. So it's very interesting. But at the risk of just sounding different from you, Bharat, I'll say Delhi Capitals for the drop. How about that? Yeah. Delhi Capitals for the drop. So MI, RCB, it's probably not going to happen. Probably not going to happen. But MI, RCB, and especially because Kolkata Knight Riders are so bloody inconsistent right now. So bloody inconsistent. But just to be different, let's see how this goes. Let's see if this happens. MI, RCB, Kings 11 Punjab, and Kolkata Knight Riders. How about that? That'll be an interesting mix. If it happens, it'll certainly liven up. We're quickly moving on to the last discussion. One name that we did not discuss, and I wrote about him on First Post for our listeners and viewers, if you want to read, Surya Kumar Yadav. Last topic of discussion on this episode. Do you think he should have been in the Indian squad for Australia?
I think we spoke about him 3 weeks ago when we both agreed that the time was now, the time is here, and he will make it to the Indian.
Yeah.
And this is before he started producing the kind of knocks started producing, like even the one last night. It reminds me of, there have been so many other instances. I remember in 1996 when India were going to South Africa and Ajay Jadeja wasn't picked in the test squad. I remember an Amul ad. You know how Amul ads always capture the mood of the country. And the ad, I remember, said Ajay Jareja, like, you know, where it was all about. Then there was like this aeroplane with Ajay Jadeja almost like just, it looked like he just missed the flight.
Yeah.
And he did go there. I remember in 2003-04, when Murali Karthik was left out of the test squad. After doing really well in the TVS Cup, there was a lot of talk about he should have gone, like, you know, Harbhajan Singh gets injured and then Karthik is flown to Australia. So these things have happened before, and now I see Twitter's like blown up about I don't even know when Surya Kumar Yadav started being referred to as Sky, which is kind of strange. But
initially, from very early, because I remember he had this Kolkata Knight Rider jersey. He used to have Sky written on the back of his jersey. So from his days at Kolkata Knight Riders. Yeah, he's been Sky ever since IPL came into being, or ever since he made a mark, you know, in the IPL. Yeah, carry on.
The IPL. So, yeah. And there's so much pressure on the selectors right now to almost include him, and which will not be easy considering, you know, in this COVID-19 world, you can't suddenly just include another member. So,
no, actually, you can. That's the point. That's the thing here. Because actually, you can. Because you're taking a 33, 34-man squad there, apart from the support staff. Did they run out of seats on that chartered flight? That, you know what, we can't take an extra player. We don't have space for your kid back. Because this is precisely the time when you can actually include an extra player in your squad. Like, okay, you know, we're taking a chartered plane. We have 200 seats available to us. You can stretch out on three and, you know, consider them as business class seats. They could have done it. That's my argument, that this is the time. Yes, they might not have played him over there, but he could have been part of the Indian setup. He could have been an option, because you look at the Indian team. I'm not talking about the ODIs here. I'm talking about just about the T20s, because where would he fit in? Because this is what I've written today. For the benefit, I'm plugging my article shamelessly again and again. Mera podcast, it's my podcast. So our podcast. So you're welcome to plug your articles. Yeah, go read his stuff as well on Cricbus. He's a brilliant writer. What I'm trying to say here is that my point here was that he bats in a way that he connects the top order and the middle order for Mumbai Indians, but he can also hit big. He can build the innings. He can take the situation into context. India have Shreyas Iyer at four. They have Virat Kohli at three. They're not going to experiment with that. But they don't have anybody at five. They don't have anybody at six. Hardik Pandya, if he's not bowling, he has to play as a pure batsman. He's included in the T20 side, so he plays as a pure batsman. You can have two pure batsmen at five and six. You, as it is, play Manish Pandey. So you can give that competition there to Manish Pandey and Hardik Pandya. And, you know, you can have that experimentation there. This is the time. They could have taken very well an extra player. And to me, he fits in there. He fits in with Manish Pandey. He's the backup option. Even if Pandya starts bowling, because you can't play Shivam Dubey and Pandya both. If Pandya starts bowling, he becomes number seven. Then you have five and six available. Then you have seven Pandya, eight, nine. So again, there's a lot of... It's not like they're playing an extra batsman who can bowl. So it's all up in the air. But again, like I said, did they not have that extra seat in the chartered flight that did not take Sky this time around? So it's a tricky one. A lot of tricky selections this time around.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Indian cricket as well. You don't get answers. like I said, going back to a few hours earlier, I was on the Trevor Horn's Zoom call where, you know, just because they'd announced a squad, there was a Zoom call. And I've seen it even, like, you know, the selector come and speak to the Australian press after like a couple of test matches, even if they've picked an unchanged squad, because that's the level of communication between the media here and the board, which is of course never been the case here where we learned our journalism. So that's the thing, like, we would never, unless you, one of the selectors is a source, so you wouldn't actually know the real reason why he's not been picked or he has been picked. But not having picked, I don't blame them not for suddenly, like, you know, pressing the panic button and like picking him 2 days later, because
no, that's not going to
then
happen. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, that's like them just reacting to the external pressures of, like, you know, having to pick him. So I guess, see, I've always been intrigued by how a national selector looks at performances in the IPL. And like, it's something that that's a story in there. It should be done by someone someday. I'm giving you an idea here.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
Where,
you never know.
I'm sure the way they look at a performance in the IPL is very different to how, because at the end of the day, it is still a domestic league. Yes, he might have scored runs against international bowlers and all that, Chris Morris and Washington Sundar and all that. But how do you judge that? Like, how do you judge that performance and then pick him with the confidence that he's going to do the same against, like, Cummins, Hazelwood, Stark, when they're bowling in tandem? So these are decisions that, you know, selectors have to make. So maybe they know something that we don't. We'll never know.
Definitely they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, and I'm not surprised that they didn't pick him immediately. Like, you know, now just because people are saying pick him, pick Sky, I don't think that would happen. But, you know, we've, like I said earlier, with Jadeja and Karthik, when there is so much talk about one guy not being picked, things happen in a way, like, you know, the karmic connections somewhere work their way, and maybe Surya Kumar will be on that flight, maybe at the expense of a wife, who knows?
Well, he will be certainly hoping so. Well, what we can say is, Bharat, that, you know, it's an intriguing setup. It's the IPL, which has intriguingly set up the squad selection. It has intriguingly set up the Indian tour of Australia, because a lot of Australian cricketers will be traveling back on that same flight. So you never know, maybe an Australian cricketer cost Sky his place on that, you know, that seat on that plane. But it's set up so well altogether. And of course, it sets up the next few months as well, because you have the England tour of India, which probably we are hearing will happen in India. Curtailed tour, not 5 tests, 3 tests, but again, lots of details pending. Then immediately you have the IPL, then the Asia Cup and the T20 World Cup. And now that everything is starting to be played, and of course the Indian tour of England, now that everything is starting to be played in the bubble, you expect all of this scheduling to go ahead, to happen. Mm. And, you know, it really sets everything up brilliantly over the next year or so. And of course, we'll always be here to talk about it and, you know, give you our views on the same. But for now, it is what we have on this episode of Hotspot. As always, Bharat, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll hope to see you next week again and talk about what's going to happen in the knockouts.
Yeah, I have another round of Sheffield Shield. I've been doing some commentary on the Sheffield Shield.
Yeah, we've heard. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I've been spending a lot of time on the cricket field. When I'm not commentating, I'm umpiring. I umpired two games over. I have to tell you this. The games I umpired on Sunday was a South Asian League where there were two T20s I umpired. And the second game was the Haryana Panthers versus Royal Kings. And I'm not kidding. Even in Bombay, the 31 years I lived in Bombay, I've never heard so much Haryanvi or Punjabi. So it was an amazing experience. For at least the 3 hours, I was like, you know, I was
Indians. We are omnipresent on this planet, Indians everywhere. And, you know, Bharat is representing the entire Indian media contingent. That just goes to show that, you know, we are omnipresent. Have fun with your umpiring, with your commentating. And of course, we'll catch you next week once again. In the meantime, do share this podcast. It's available on all social media platforms. And of course, it's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and JioSaavn Podcasts, and on Google Podcasts as well, as always on YouTube too. Until next time, it's goodbye and stay safe.
Dhoni finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.